Welcome back to another episode of Run Yogi Diaries. This is your host, Santosh Shiva. If you're new to the channel, please do remember to subscribe. If you like this conversation, hit like and leave your comments below and let us know what you think. Excited to have today in the house a dear friend, Srinath Nagarur, who has been on this fascinating journey of self-discovery in the area of fitness, weight loss, and health. After struggling for many years with fluctuating weight and fat gain, he seems to have landed on something that's working consistently for him, and over the last year or so has lost significant weight, close to 50 pounds, I believe. We get behind the scenes. I love this conversation, took a lot away. I'm sure you will. Let's dig in. Also, as a form of disclaimer, all information shared in this podcast is from personal experience and does not construe medical advice. So if you are dealing with medical conditions, you should talk to your physician. Hey Srinath, welcome to Run Yogi Diaries.
Hey Santosh, thanks for having me here. I'm finally worthy enough to join this chat.
You're always worthy enough. So thanks for taking the time and joining us in this conversation. You've been going through a fascinating journey of health, fitness, and weight loss, which is of interest to everyone today, right? So I thought it'd be a great conversation. You obviously are a busy professional, but you managed to find something that's working. So we'll dig into all of that. But before that, let me take a stab at introducing you, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Thanks, Santosh. Right. So is that you're going to do that, or am I going to do that?
I'll introduce you, and then you can add anything that I've missed.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So, Srinath and I go a long way. We are friends for decades, and so I know a few things about him, which I'm not going to reveal all of it, but I'll do a bit of an introduction here. So, Srinath Nagarur, you live in Chicago. Work in the tech industry as an executive in the business side of things, and married, kids, and you've been someone who's been pursuing fitness for a long time, but then you seem to have landed on something that's working well for you. What else? Originally from Bangalore, been in the US for a couple of decades as well. What else? Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so. I think you got it right.
Okay. Good. So Srinath, what we'll do is maybe start with some flashback, right? And I've known you for so many years, and you're a big made guy. You're 6'3", almost like a basketball player, and so you're a big made guy, and right and. And a lot of us who are big made guys, although I'm not as big made as you are, but I do tend to also fall in that spectrum. We struggle with what's the right body, size or body structure for ourselves. And so I think this conversation might throw some light around weight, fitness, and all of that good stuff that you've been pursuing. So let me maybe have you take us back into a bit of a flashback about your own, search and struggles in the space and how you landed today. So shall we do that?
No, absolutely. Thanks for kindling some memories there. I think I'm going to be getting to my milestone year this year, my 50th year. So while I was growing up, my environment had always told me that we are coming from a family that has fat genes. So my mom's side especially, repeatedly said, hey, we have a tendency to put on weight. So somewhere I think there was a normalization that had happened, with regards to our ability to, put on weight, right? So I think that's how I grew up, and I'm talking about when I came to understand my senses and everything else. And interestingly enough, my dad is only 5'8", and my mom is only 5'1". So in some way and fashion, I just ended up growing to become 6'2", 6'3", you know, in height. So all through the growing years, I've always been considered to be a big guy. You know, those were the days when we did not know the concept of bullying, but I was bullied quite a bit. My nicknames were good enough in that respect. And, you know, I was big at every stage of my life. I was always the biggest kid in the class, not only tall, but also in terms of, you know, the weight and other things. Because of that, the sports that I picked as well was also aligned with my size, because I was conditioned, you know, to do things in a certain manner. So I used to love to play cricket. So even when I used to play cricket, I used to have trouble running between the wickets. So I always used to have runners. So it used to become a default because I wasn't running fast enough. Those days, there was no concept of basketball and others. So we used to play kabaddi and khokho in school. Mm-hmm. And I always used to choose kabaddi because, you know, I was the big guy in the team trying to hold everything together and stuff like that. So I think it was something that I had accepted, you know, as a norm. But I then picked up shuttle in the later part of my school years, and I did very well with shuttle. But I think my weight, my size was always an impediment for me to do that, right? I came to college, you know, I suddenly realized, you know, that my eating habits and, you know, my living habits completely transformed. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens in college and, you know, completely went out of control. And I think in the third year of engineering, I was possibly at my highest weight ever, right? Again, I was a big guy, so highest weight ever, you know, felt sick. I never could get trousers ready-made. I could not get shoes. So it's a very hard, I mean, people who are dealing with weight and, you know, those challenges, it is a very real problem. You know, they do not express. I mean, I never expressed, but I always used to feel very embarrassed about it. But also I had finished 3 years in engineering. I was very shy. I never used to hang out. I mean, I used to hang out with my friends and all that stuff, but never about girls and so on and so forth. And, I was frustrated. I wanted to change. And then my first moment happened when I was in the library. I still remember, March 18th of 1994. I'm good with dates. So, March 18, 1994, I happened to be in my college library and I was, you know, browsing some magazines, and suddenly I found this guy, Amjad Khan's son, who went through a transformation. Okay. And this is the time of the magazines, right? No computers, nothing. So I just read that article and something switched in my head, and I came out and I said, okay, today is a day. For the next 6 months, I'm going to just eat set food, right? And for the next 6 months, I'm going to do nothing other than eat set food. And it was one of the fantastic journeys in my life, because I started running in the morning, something that I hated, and I started eating fixed food. The next 6 months, I lost every bit of the weight that I was carrying for several years. So fantastic feeling. November 18th, I broke my fast. I was at my lowest weight ever since I had become a full-grown adult. You know, I thought I've arrived, and then I started living life again. So things went on, and then I put on all the weight in the next possibly about close to about three and a half years. I didn't get to my full blown weight ever again until about a year ago. But it started adding up, you know, it started adding up again. You know, bad habits and, you know, a lot of things happening, you know, when you're getting out of college and so on and so forth. And then, of course, you know, after I lost my weight, I met my wife. I mean, suddenly she discovered somebody new, and, you know, I said, okay. And we got married a little early, and then we moved in. And then after that, weight has been a fluctuating exercise, right? So sometimes I feel, okay, I've gone beyond a certain point, then I go into a diet that is fad. So I have, you know, friends recommending GM diet, you know, where you do a 7-day fast, a keto diet, South Beach diet, And you know, and all these different things have happened over the last 20 years, and I've gone through several, you know, ups and downs in the process.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fascinating. So it seems like you've been on this cyclical exploratory journey, right? And now, you did talk about the emotional impact, and I think anyone you know, dealing with and it's again subjective, right? In the sense that it's true for you, it's real for you, and you know, you might have people come and say, "Oh, why are you fussing over it? You seem fine," you know. But at the same time, at a personal level, you're kind of still dealing with, you know, there's something missing for me, and you know, I want to there's something about the weight I'm carrying or whatever, right? And there's this whole subculture of political rightness today in the world about fat shaming, and you know, that's another part, right? And so you're kind of walking that fine line in terms of what's right for you versus am I judging somebody for being a certain weight or a certain look, right? So I'm sure we'll double click on some of that aspect as well. But let's fast forward, right? And I've seen you significantly lose weight. I mean, I told you I couldn't recognize you when I saw you on the camera today. And since the last time I met you, you've lost more weight, and you look very different, right, from before. And it's been consistent. I think for the last 2 years, you've been on this, and it's been very consistent. So that's the thing that fascinated me, because like you said, there are fads and people lose weight, and then again, after a few months, it's again back. So let's get to that in terms of how did you land here and what's working for you? And so let's get there.
So I wanna just respond to one point that you made about the emotional impact of carrying a lot of weight. That emotional impact of carrying a lot of weight is going to be there for life for people, right? It is very difficult to get off that feeling, okay? Because you don't know what is enough, because you are, you know, all the way out to perfect yourself and so on and so forth. So it's a very psychologically impacting thing, right? So even people who have gone through transformations, who are very proud of what they have done, are still dealing with that level of insecurity in their minds. I can tell you with personal experience, and it'll be there. It will be there because it has hit, you know, your nerve somewhere very deep inside, and it takes a lot of effort, you know, to get out of it. So I mean, again, there's a message. If you are psychologically impacted, there are many of them out there that are dealing with similar exercise. That is number one. Number two, I keep hearing you making reference to weight loss. Again, it is not weight loss, it is fat loss. And this is a learning that I have gone through after close to 30 years. You know, if I have to, it's actually very interesting. It just occurred to me. The first time I started this was on March 18, 1994, which is exactly 30 years as of tomorrow, right? It just came to me. So anyways, so that is number one. The second, you know, point that I also wanted to talk about was with regards to the timeline. So my journey, you know, where I think you have had this conversation, you and I have had this conversation before, and I said, Santosh, I wanna wait for us to have this conversation because I need to really understand, you know, the depth of what I'm trying to do. And, you know, so it is important that I come into this conversation only when I have come to realize that I understand now what is being done and what needs to be done and so on and so forth. So I think I just wanted to kind of connect those two points.
Yeah, makes sense. No, well. that's a great point. I think thanks for that clarification. I agree. I think it's fat loss and weight loss, not weight loss. That's a perfect reframing, because that answers a lot of questions and it sets the right context, right? Because fat loss is a health conversation. It's not a about looks, and it's not about judging how you look, and it's more of health, right? Because having a lot of fat in your body has health impact. So thanks. That makes perfect sense. So let's kind of dig in and fast forward. Let's get to what happened 2 years ago when you bumped into this new. How did it happen? First of all, let's get there.
See, I think like with everyone else, I think lockdown, obviously was a transformative period, and this one I have to credit my wife. She hit the concept of quantified nutrition in 2020. All right. And this was around the same time that there was a company called Squats, which has now reframed itself as Fitter, which came into existence, and it became very, very prevalent in the market, right? About providing.
And by the way, they're not sponsoring the show.
Yeah, they are not sponsoring the show, but there are three pieces of inspiration for me. And, since we were talking about the starting point, I just wanted to give you the genesis of it. Because, again, if I can share my weight journey graphs over the last 20 years, and you'll actually see my weight fluctuations over the years. And I can say, okay, this was a time when I dropped this many pounds because of no carb diet. This was a time I dropped this much weight because of keto diet or South Beach diet, or I was running the marathon or, something like that, right? So every time there used to be that dip, okay? And in 2020, this was again a new phenomena that came to my attention, and that was quantified nutrition. Mm-hmm. And, the whole thing started with, putting up a diet plan and, eating something here and there and so on and so forth. So I started quantified nutrition in 2020, just right after the lockdown. And expectedly, I did lose, a lot of weight / fat, not to the extent that I have experienced this time, but it did happen. And somewhere through the process, there were things that were happening at work and, in life, stress and, a lot of commotion. Mm-hmm. So you suddenly said, hey, I have other shit to deal with. Sorry for the language, but I have other stuff to deal with. So let me figure this out later. Mm-hmm. But while I was going through this journey, I also did a lot of research on nutrition and, things like that. So I did understand the fundamentals of why quantified nutrition and so on and so forth. And but it was a classic case where I knew what to do, but I never had the urge or the motivation to do it, right? So 2020, 2021, and 2022, and you're talking about 2 years, to be very honest. I mean, this journey of mine started exactly a year ago, and the whole journey of this whole transformation, and I'm just coming to a year in the next week. So I think in 2022 I hit the peak of my weight.
Okay.
Again, this was the second time in my life, and it was one of those situations where you knew what to do. You knew what's going to make a difference to you, but you're not able to do it. And a lot of us go through that. We know the theory very well. We know we should not be doing X, Y, Z in a day. We know we should not be, drinking excessively. We should not be, eating oily food, and we should not be eating excessive food and stuff like that. But we don't do it. We are not able to do it. And that was a struggle that I was going through at that point in time. And I said, this has to change. So I went back to the basics. And I said, I understand the technology. I understand the science. And I know what needs to be done. And I said, okay, how do I get it done now? Now it's the question of execution, right? Mm. So on March 27th, good with dates, 2022.
You're one of the rare guys who remembers dates,
I sound like that guy in Dil Chahta Hai, right? I mean, that other boyfriend, right? I mean, it's like, so it's actually a very nerdy character, knowing Dech. But I remember Dech for whatever reason. March 27th last year. So there were multiple things that were coming together, right, for me. So one, you know, I had, I'm a big fan of the book, The Power of Habit. Okay, if you guys have read it, great. If you've not, definitely pick it up. Similar book is Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
So I was also going through some internal coaching at work and so on and so forth. So I kind of came to realize that if changes have to be made, habits have to be changed, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing that, you know, in my head, I was thinking, there's no master plan to this, right? I mean, this is all working on your subconscious for a while. So habit had to be changed. That is number one. The second thing, you know, maybe it's the age, maybe whatever it is, right? I started believing in simplifying life. I wanted to simplify everything that I do. You know, how I live and what I do and stuff like that. No extravagance.
So this has got nothing to do with the weight part as such. It's just
This has nothing to do with weight, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is about just simplifying life and habit creation and so on and so forth. And I said, with zero expectations about what is going to happen, I'm going to make a lifestyle change with the knowledge I have about the science of nutrition. Okay. By the time, by the way, I had gotten my certification and all that stuff done. So I understood, you know, the various things that are happening and so on and so forth. So at that point in time, a very interesting topic hit my, you know, Insta Reels, and I did a little bit more of research. And this is the concept of genetics. Okay. So it took me back to the point that I made when I was growing up, which my mom kept saying, hey, it is genetics. It's all in the genes. We are supposed to be big. We are supposed to be carrying a lot of weight. We can't do anything about it, you know? And we've had these conversations many times about destiny and ownership.
Yeah.
I'm not a big believer in destiny. I'm a big believer in action and acceptance. So I said, this is an interesting thing, which is epigenetics. Epigenetics is the expression of genes, which is a function of your environment and your behavior and your lifestyle. And so a lot of the times what happens is these small things, I don't go too deep into it, but these make big impact on my thinking process.
Right.
So I said, okay, habit simplified, epigenetics. So with an intent to see what can I do with myself, I started the journey, right? And so I knew the science, so I got to the basics. I created a meal plan for myself, and then the journey started. And so I did not go to the gym, no physical exercises. It was only nutrition for the first 9 months. Only food, right? No physical exercise. Yeah. I didn't put pressure on myself of any kind. But, you know, I went through that. So,
right.
I'll pause.
Those are great points, Srinath. So one is, I want to double click on one point, right? One is about what is quantified nutrition, if you can talk a little bit about what that is. And also speak a little bit about the struggle with implementation. You talked about, you know, while you knew all of it, the science was clear, you knew what to be done. And that is true for most everybody, right? You know what the right thing to do is, but the challenge is also always on execution, right? Now, if you can talk a little bit of what is quantified nutrition, A, and B, what are the challenges you faced in implementing it? Right. And then maybe I got the connection in terms of how you kind of landed on this thing about habits and genetics. And we'll double click on that as well. But if you can spend some time on what is quantified nutrition in the first place.
See, quantified nutrition, I will possibly go back to a little more basics so that I can correlate it to quantified nutrition. all of us need energy to live, right? Mm-hmm. And so for us to breathe and for all the functions of our body to function the way it needs to function, whether it's a heart or lungs or kidney or whatever, you need a certain amount of energy, you know, to do that, right? And that comes in the form of, you know, glycogen, you know, which is basically glucose broken into glycogen, and glycogen through the concept of ATP, which is your process of breakdown to deliver energy in kilocalories, is done inside the body through the various organs. So for us, based on our body composition and the body weight that we carry, we need a base energy every day. Okay. So that's called as your basal metabolic rate. This is if you are just lying down in Shavasana, mm-hmm. okay, not doing anything, right? And then you are basically walking, you know, you're working, you're thinking, your brain uses a lot of energy and so on and so forth. So there's a little more extra energy that you need. And that total is called the total daily energy expenditure. It's called TDEE. Okay. Okay, so BMR, which is your basal metabolic rate, and TDEE is your total daily energy expenditure. So your body has the ability to deliver to itself the energy if you do not provide any external energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it has the ability. It can break down from the reserves. It'll reach out to your muscles. It'll reach out to your fat. And so on and so forth, because there is a certain amount of energy that's already existing. That's how you see people who are fasting for 7 days, 10 days, 30 days. They all exist. I mean, they don't die, right? I mean, so you have the ability to do that. But there are hormones in your stomach. There are two primary hormones. I'm sorry, I'm not going to go very scientific, but just to give you a sense, because I'll connect the dots later. There's a hormone called ghrelin in your stomach, which is called as the hunger hormone. And there is a hormone called leptin, which is your satiation hormone. So these are the two hormones that function when it is asking you for food and when it is saying you have eaten enough. So these are the hormones that are at work. So a lot of the times when ghrelin responds, it is because it is looking at the energy that is available inside the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how it reaches out and says, hey, you're hungry. It sends out a brain signal to your brain and you say, oh, it's 1:30. So ghrelin is woken up. So, you know, let me go and eat. Maybe you don't need, but you eat. So I'll come to that later. So that's essentially a broad sense of the basal metabolic rate and the total daily energy expenditure. Now, in our food, and I'll only go to macros and micros. So there are two kinds of nutrients. You have macronutrients and then you have micronutrients. Macronutrients are classified into three parts: protein, carbs, and fat. And micronutrients are, you know, your fiber and your sodium and your, you know, minerals, vitamins, and so on and so forth, right? So we'll not worry about micronutrients for now, but we'll just focus on the macros. So macros has three categories: protein, carbs, and fats. I'm sure everyone knows that. Protein carries an energy of 4 calories. Carbs carry 4 calories. And fat carries 9 calories.
Okay. Per some unit, right? What is it?
Per gram. Per gram.
Per gram.
Per gram. So typically what happens is that when you consume, consume a protein gram, you get 4 calories of protein gram, and then you get 4 calories of carb gram and 9 calories of fat gram. So when you are eating your food, it is very important that you have a combination of protein, carbs, and fat. That is what we call as balanced food, right? Mm. So your body needs these three macros for a healthy functioning, okay? And why is a question as well, right? So protein is a need for your body for your cell reconstruction. Okay, we get confused about how protein is for muscle building. Muscle building is one part of it, but the fundamental function of protein is cell reconstruction. So So there is, your body is always going through a lot of cell reconstructions on a daily basis. Cells get damaged, you know, cells get reconstructed. So it has a self-defining mechanism of cell reconstruction. So protein helps in rebuilding cells. The carbs is what is actually transitioning into core energy. So carb gives you quick energy, right? The process of the carbohydrate going into glucose, glucose going into glycogen. It's a very simple process. So that's the one that gives you the burst of energy. Protein gives you the ability to reconstruct your cells. And fat is basically providing you lubrication, you know, because there are your organs and, you know, the muscles. So the lubrication is provided by fat, and also fat provides you reserves. Mm-hmm. So typically what happens is that ratio is very important, right? That ratio of protein, carb, and fat is very important. And right. We mess up as humans, mm-hmm. We mess up on the consumption of the ratio.
Mm.
So depending on the heritage, depending on your background, depending on your you know, what kind of food you like and what kind of food you eat and so on and so forth, you end up messing that ratio. And because of that, you know, the whole idea gets screwed up. So in quantified nutrition, you basically measure your food. So whatever you eat, you measure. So when you measure, you will get a sense of what is the macro that you are getting in that particular item. And you basically identify that against your basal metabolic rate and your TDEE, right?
Got it. So
that is how you plan your food. And that is quantified nutrition.
Got it. No, that makes, that's very helpful. And I think it's almost like a logical way of eating based on what you need. And perhaps it's required because, to your point, right, most of us have become emotional eaters, right? And that's true as human beings. You know, we are emotional beings and our eating is also emotional. And I think what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that, okay, that is fine where it is. You can't suddenly stop enjoying your chole bhature, and, you know, the moment you talk about chole bhature or anything that's your favorite food, you start salivating, you start imagining you want to eat it. And the next time you see it in the restaurant, you're going to binge on it, right? And so here, from what I'm hearing is a method to, okay, step back and say, okay, one is the eating by instinct, eating by emotions. And the other is to say, what do you really need? And here's a method to start with that process, right? At least get to know, be aware of this is what you need just to, as a person to thrive. That's what I'm hearing. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Because otherwise we are mostly, you talk about gulab jamun, and I'm sure we'll all jump at it and want to have a go at it, right? Or anything, right? That makes sense. Now, coming to, that's a very logical left, you know, if, for lack of a better word, left brain way of functioning, which is not the case for most
people. See, I want to take a minute. I just want to respond to one part that you talked about, which is emotional eating. Okay.
Yeah.
So I did some digging into emotional eating. I mean, you know, all of us, I mean, you know, I love masala dosas. I love, you know, South Indian food. And I always wondered, I mean, why do we indulge? Right. And this happened, actually, this was a discovery I made about 3 months ago when the Diwali time happened. Right. See, we have, and the best part of it is everything is hormones. Everything is actually your brain playing games with you. Okay. So this is, you have to observe the game that the hormone is playing through a different brainwave. And I'll tell you what, there is something called dopamine. Okay. So when you eat something, there is an impact on your dopamine. Okay. So I will give you an example. Think of it like puri, you know, when you put a puri inside oil, you know, it fluffs up, right? And when it fluffs up, oh, it looks good. You know, it is fluffed up. And after you put it on a plate, it goes down. But you like the feeling of fluffing up. So you want to fry that again. for it to fluff up. That moment of that high is the dopamine effect. So our brain is structured in a way that we want that dopamine effect. So when you eat that gulab jamun, when that sweet hits you, there's a dopamine high. You can't stop at one because you want that high again. It felt good. And that does with every other thing, whether it's alcohol or, you know, any other elements that are there, right? I think you just need to be present to that. Is all that I'm saying. I mean, all of us experience it, and it's one hell of a challenge to you know, really work around it.
Absolutely correct. You're right, and I think we now know that dopamine, that whole process of getting that dopamine high, is a part of all of our struggles, food, social media, whatever, right? All the distractions that we have around us gives us that dopamine high, and it's not necessarily good for you, but it gives you that instant high in whatever form, right?
See, what I've realized is, and again, a collection of a lot of different elements, if you are able to be present to the dopamine high, and if you are able to, you know, control that whole thing, right? I mean, even Insta Reels, if you are able to define saying that I'm going to spend this much time, get out. It's not easy. I mean, again, I go back to connecting to the dots of the habit loop. It is very important to simplify, create a habit so that all these things become part of your day-to-day living, because you can't do without it also. Otherwise, you go into deprivation and then you go into excess, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that I was struggling with for 20 years.
Yeah, makes sense. So I think maybe that's a good time to pivot into that whole habit approach you've taken, right? And which is what is working. And I think the question that everybody has is consistency, and how did you do that? And I think let's pivot into that. So this whole idea about habits and how did you implement it, and what should people do?
So first thing that you need to get out of mentally, right? Or I needed to get out of mentally, is this taboo and embarrassment that we are measuring our food. Okay. This is actually one of the biggest missteps that I have seen a lot of my friends go through, because a lot of friends came to me and asked me to put up diet plan and so on and so forth. And the place where they struggle with is, it's okay. I don't have to measure. Okay. We measure our weight. And we are so happy when we drop 0.5 pounds. Yeah. We measure our biometrics. We measure our blood levels. But we don't measure our food. It's a very strange behavior for a human being that we find it very difficult. All right. So I think the first barrier that I had to get out of in my own head was that the taboo of being judged for measuring my food, because it looked very stupid, you know, when I go to people's houses or, you know, everything else, right? Which I figured out workarounds later on. So I think that's the first thing that you need to get that thing off your head, that measuring food is funny or it is stupid and so on and so forth. That is number one. Number two, you have to come to terms that you can eat anything and everything that your heart wants. Okay. Quantified nutrition is not starvation. Okay. It is only about eating meal in a balanced manner so that you are getting the nutrients that your body needs.
Right.
And that's the fundamental of quantified nutrition. So you're giving your body the nutrient that it needs. Okay. And it's a percentage of protein, carbs, and fat, depending on what your health parameters are, health metrics are, and so on and so forth. Not everybody can consume it. It's not a one size fits all. So we have to work out individual plan and this and that, right? So that is number two. Number three, as I said, you can eat anything. Pick your comfort foods. This was the third thing that I learned, okay? And which goes back to my point on simplicity, right? So my favorite comfort food is dal and rice.
Okay.
Not moong dal, not brown rice. It's just dal and rice and curd. These are the three comfort foods for me. So as long as you have determined your comfort food, okay, you actually will need to create a plan to consume the nutrients that you need through the comfort food that you are able to consume. So you're not making a drastic change to the way you live your life. Okay. So that was the third very important thing that I learned, okay, while I was initiating this particular process, right? The fourth thing, which happened over a period of time, is the food texture. See, we all have, there are two things why we consume food, right? And again, it's a concept of hormones and brain and ghrelin and leptin and all that stuff, right? See, we consume food because we like the smell and we like the texture. It's touching your senses, okay? So as long as you're able to create comfort foods with the right nutrients, leveraging the right macros, creating the right texture and smell, which is repeatable.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, yeah. Repeatable, satiating. Once you figure that out for yourself, it is so easy. It is no longer a diet. It is a lifestyle. It is a, and then you start seeing the changes. I mean, you know, both my wife and I got on this journey, and the kind of realizations that we get to is actually very joyous. I mean, it is very joyous. I mean, you get into and we've done a lot of things after that. I mean, it will take maybe another hour to talk about some of those modifications, but these are all very simple. No complications. That is number four. Number five, connecting back to my theory on simplicity, keep your foods simple. Okay. Very simple, right? Keep your foods simple and what works for you. You know, I don't want to go on this journey of, oh, don't eat processed food and all that. That's all established. I mean, everybody knows you're not supposed to eat processed food. No questions about it, right? Keep your food simple. Keep your foods, make your own meal. I cook my food a lot. My wife does it. I cook it. Keep your cooking process simple. Enjoy your cooking process and learn the science behind it. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And when you start seeing the results, you will actually start enjoying more and more. And we'll talk about results because that's a very important element that we need to touch upon, because a lot of the weight fat loss experiments fail because you are not seeing progress at the rate at which you want to see. So we want to talk about that as well. But I want to pause and, you know, respond to any other things that you have.
Yeah, no, those are great. Those are great points. And I think what I'm, you know, kind of hearing is, you know, connecting back to this whole idea about power of habits and atomic habits, right? We referred to that book in the past. And a lot of that has to do with working with where you are and building from there in terms of small changes, but repeatable, consistent small changes. And I think if I were to connect back to what you're saying, which makes a lot of sense, is to use your comfort food as a baseline, right? Instead of trying to dramatically change, which is where everybody struggles, and then they come back after 15 days, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm missing my comfort food, and boom, back to binging.
Absolutely.
Instead, what you're saying is stay with your comfort food and build around it like an adjacency. And that helps you stay consistent. And coming back to that emotional eating part, right? And the Japanese call it the umami. My understanding of what umami is that if there are three flavors, which is sweet, bitter, saltiness, sourness, and then the Japanese call umami, which is that unique combination of texture and flavor that foods have, right? So if you talked about, let's say, your dal chawal as an example, there's something unique about it. It's not the salt, it's not the sour, it's not the, there's a unique emotional content in it, which is what the Japanese refer to as umami. And that is important because without that, you're not going to be able to make the progress that you just described, right? That's my takeaway from what you're saying.
Thanks for bringing reference to Umami, because that was one of the other impactful points that came to me when I was a lot of the research that I've done is only for my own consumption, right? Because I'm I'm operating from a point of curiosity. Yeah. Because this has happened so many times before. Yeah. And why are we doing the same thing again, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you're well articulated the summary of what I was trying to say. Is pick your comfort food, understand what you need, right? Play around with texture and flavor. And then it doesn't feel like you're actually doing anything substantially different from what you're already doing. Right.
Yeah.
And what happens? See, there are two places where you will see the impact. Okay. Mm-hmm. You will not be able to consume the amount of protein that is actually prescribed for you per day. You're not consuming. I can go out on a limb and tell you that you're not eating enough protein. Because if you're eating enough protein, you will not be able to eat carbs. That is the biggest, discovery that we made along the way. I'll give you an example, if I may, Santosh. I know not trying to digress, but very relevant example. I'll give you possibly two examples and then, we can decide. When you are thirsty, right? You are extremely thirsty. You go and drink water, right? After the first glass of water, your thirst is quenched. Can you drink more water after that? Possibly not. Difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. But when you are hungry, you go and eat rice and rasam and your comfort food. How many can you eat? You have no definition for that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Hunger, thirst, they're all the same. So carbs, your body has a mechanism to hold on to carbs because, the human evolution has been about, conservation, right? That's how the fat thing happened. And there's a lot of science. I don't want to go into it.
Yeah.
On the contrary, when you're hungry, go and eat 10 eggs. Mm-hmm. Go and eat the same amount of calories equivalent to carbs. You will not be able to consume that. Because there is a different impact that protein has on your hunger as compared to carbs. So that's point I'm trying to make is when you create your balanced food in your plate and you put the right quantity of protein, you will realize that you will not be able to consume the carbs that you were traditionally consuming.
Yeah.
And that's makes something that sense. You will need to think.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a good hack, right? That's a good hack as well in terms of just from a day-to-day thinking perspective for people. Even if you don't get the science and the science behind it, there's one thing that somebody can take away from this conversation is that, if you can increase your protein content, just start looking at what is the amount of protein content and then start seeing how you can change absolutely. That itself could be your first step towards this lifestyle.
That is absolutely the first step because especially for people who are aging, right? Mm. Who are going between 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
You're actually losing your muscle. Mm-hmm. Right? So when you do fat diets, you don't know whether you're losing muscle or fat, right?
Yeah.
So protein actually helps reconstruction of your cells. So not having enough protein in your body is actually going to be impacting your muscle depletion. See, that is a reason why older age adults start developing arthritis and other kinds of challenges because there is an undue amount of knee pain and so on and so forth because your skeletal structure is now depleted of all the muscle mass. And it's covered by fat. And fat is nothing but, blubber.
Yeah.
So you're not getting enough protein. Because of that, you're putting a lot of pressure on your skeletal muscle, skeletons. So because of which the joints are losing out. on its ability to perform to the extent, right? So I think we'll, as I said, I mean, it's a long subject. There's so much to talk. But essentially, that's the broad summary.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so you know, I just want to pivot into this one element that you talked about, results, right? And you mentioned, and which is valid, that if results are not moving, you tend to get discouraged. So let's spend a few minutes on that aspect, because I think that's important as well.
See, I think a very, very important point, actually. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges with fat loss regimens is our expectations of results. Okay. So, you know, this was a random example. I was giving someone, and I'll possibly explain to you, you know, I can't explain to you from a visual standpoint, but so I was talking to someone and said, hey, I was doing this. I need to do this weight loss and stuff like that. I said, see, I'm going to work with you if you give yourself 1 year time, right? I'm not going to be able to do it. You know, he said, oh, I'm getting ready for a wedding. Wedding is in 3 months. I want to be ready for the wedding, right? And once upon a time, I used to be a proponent of that, but not after I've understood the process. So I said, hey, come, let me show you something. So I took a toilet paper roll. Okay. I put it on the counter and I covered it with a piece of cloth. Okay. And I said, see, this toilet paper roll is your body, that, you know, your internals, okay, which is basically giving you the shape. And your cover on top of it, your cloth on top of it, is your outer skin, right? So I took out that thing, I compressed the toilet paper roll, okay, and I put the cloth back on it again. I said, see, you have a weight loss in 3 months, okay? That's what happens when you do sudden, drastic changes. You are basically compressing the body forcefully, right? But if you are going to take a consistent approach, and I took another toilet paper roll, and I started cutting out one paper at a time, and I cut it out over a period of time, and it said, okay, this is how you go down. This is healthy because you're taking out layers after layers, and it's a function of time. It's a function of time and consistency, and it's not a function of, you know, some random stuff. So these are broad examples. So that is number one, right? In a toilet paper roll, when you take out the first paper out, you don't see any change in your body, in your physical appearance. When you take out the second, you don't see any change. When you take out the third, you don't see any change. But what you will have to be mentally ready is that change is happening. So, like, I'll give an example. I have a car driver that picks me up. I travel pretty much every week. You're aware of it. And he used to meet me every week for the first 7 months. And I drop my, you know, weight, fat, all that stuff. One day he came, he picked me up and he said, Shree, what have you done to yourself? I said, Nader, you met me on Friday and today is Monday. What could I have done in the 3 days? That's when he first noticed. Okay. That period in time when people are not noticing is when you lose your motivation. That is when this whole thing sounds stupid. Oh, I'm measuring my rice, so stupid. I'm measuring my this thing, it's so stupid, and so on and so forth, right? Trust me, the change is happening. You don't know about it, okay? A recent example happened to my wife. She was plateaued at a certain weight for almost about 7 weeks, and she was so stressed out. So stressed out. She said, I'm doing everything. I am not seeing the change. The weight is not moving. The scale is saying the same. And after the 7th week, overnight, her weight dropped by 7 pounds. Overnight. Okay. So your scale is a function of several different things that are happening inside your body. It's a function of your hormones. It is a function of your weight, water retention. So there are so many different elements that are playing out. Right. So for you to continue, you have to stick to a plan. There is no shortcut. There's no rocket science. You have to stick to a plan.
Yep.
That's it. I mean, as I said, habit simplified is all that matters, and understanding. Yep. And it is very important to understand.
Yeah. Makes sense. I hear you. And I think this is a topic that maybe will require a little bit more of, deep dive, especially because we live in a results oriented society, right? And it's just the way, the nature of the beast. But I think what may be important is to spend some time around how do you, maybe it's not that weekly results that you should be measuring. Maybe it's the monthly result. Maybe it's 15 days, but there is some form of, what do you look for as a result so that you can still say that you're going in the right direction? And maybe it's, so that's something maybe we should talk about.
I think just to kind of when I say this, what happens is we go by conventional wisdom. We basically have read in various journals and things and et cetera, that you lose on an average 2 pounds a week, or you lose on an average 1 pound a week. So there are some parameters that we have set in our heads about what is acceptable as a weight loss, right?
Yeah.
So that is number one. Number two, we believe that weight dropping, or I'm using weight because fat is a loss and weight is a drop. Weight dropping is a consistently downward cycle. That is not true. Okay. So it's like a stock market, right? I mean, if you look at a stock market on a day-to-day basis, there could be a lot of fluctuations, right? If you look at any of the high-performing stock, whether it's an Amazon or a Google, you don't look at a, weekly performance, right?
Yeah,
you look at it on an annual basis and say, okay, there is all this, but then it is rising. That is what happens with the weight loss, right? It is going, kind of like a sinusoidal wave, but on a downward spiral. You will see absolutely, if you see it over a period of time. So let me summarize. So if you really want to look at the difference that is happening to your body, measure your weight on a daily basis, but average it out on a weekly basis. Okay. So that will give you a better sense of the progress that you're making and how it is impacting you. And the progress that you're making is not a function of an algebraic equation, right? It is not according to that, because you will slip here and there, you will eat something here and there, you are going to miss some things, and there are a lot of different elements to this, as you said. I mean, this needs a lot more conversation because it's a function of your sleep, it's a function of your stress, it's a function of your activities, and so on and so forth. So so that's where we are.
Makes sense. Hey, I know we've spent almost an hour. We thought we'll do a 30-minute conversation, and we are here almost hitting an hour, and I think the topic is such that you can keep going on, but I think there are some golden nuggets that I believe we've discovered in this conversation, Srinath. And very practical, mindset changes that people can adopt after hearing this conversation. And I agree with you. We can do a deep dive on certain specifics, so I can have you back in the studio again, my beautiful studio. I want to kind of maybe do a wrap up here. I believe we've covered a whole bunch of topics from, the psychological aspect of weight loss. We've talked about habits. We've talked about the nutritional science behind, and it's not weight loss, it's fat loss. And, you've achieved close to 50 pounds, I believe. A lot more, that's like 30% of you is gone. So that's all amazing, right? So I want to kind of maybe bring this conversation to a close here. But before that, I want to do a fun Q&A round.
Okay.
All right. Since you're talking about food, and I like this question that I, favorite question to all my guests. What's your favorite junk food?
I love masala dosa. I don't know if we want to call it junk food. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, I've actually forgotten what junk food I used to like. I'm not a big fan of junk food, actually. I mean, if you're thinking, okay, fries or nuggets or whatever, never been a big fan of that.
You're in state of nirvana. Okay.
My state of weight acquisition is all because of the other kinds of food, right? The masala dosas and the idlis and so on.
Masala dosa. Okay. What's your favorite way to spend a lazy day other than fussing over nutrition and weight loss?
I definitely do a lot of singing. I have this created this penchant habit because now I don't get to laze too much because there's too much adrenaline in my head. So I'm either singing or I'm doing some chores around the house or I'm cleaning or things like that. That's how I normally spend. I've cut back a lot on my TV time. So not been very active on watching anything. So
all right. Okay. So last one, I know in the interest of time, you have somewhere to go. If we made a movie of your life so far, what genre would you put it in? And who would you hire to play your character?
See, I think it will be a family drama or family social, right? With a little bit of some sports angle to it. Okay. And just for my wife's sake, I will say we'll add a little dash of romance also to it because she doesn't think I am that. So I think it will predominantly be a family social.
And who would you hire to play for it? Play your role?
See, Akshay Kumar is too old now, so I have to get someone younger, right? So out of the young lot, I think Karthik Aryan would be a good choice.
Okay, Karthik, the script coming your way. Awesome. Hey, that was good. I didn't think you would take that long to answer that question, but you never know, right? But thanks. I had to reduce the number of questions to only 3. Usually I asked 5, but I know you need to go. But thanks, Srinath, for the time you spent with us. Before I go, I want to give you the last word. Any final message for the listeners?
No, I think my only message is that there is a lot of stuff that is available on social media. I am also a big consumer of a lot of things on social media. Just be cognizant about, who you follow, number one. Also, do your own research. Don't believe everything that you hear. I'm actually from a transformation of fat loss or weight loss, whatever you want to call it, healthy living. I'm now transitioning into structure and muscle building journey. I'm again discovering. I mean, it's a 3-month-old exercise, so I'm discovering. So there's a lot of stuff that's out there with regards to this. So I'm learning, and I'm doing my own research. So spend time. It's your life. It is your body. I think it is worth it. It's a lot of fun. I can tell you that once you get into the groove, I mean, you suddenly feel one amongst, the people who are, talking about fitness. It's very simple. It's not complicated at all. Just give yourself a little bit of room.
Great. That's a great message, Srinath. I'm going to let you go and have you spend the rest of the afternoon, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stay in touch.
All right.